This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Escape Pod. I'm Mark, and with Joe, and we've got a special guest who we're going to spoil you later with. In the meantime, we've got a lot of exciting topics to talk about. Joe, how was your week first?
Good afternoon, everybody. Yes, welcome to the Escape Pod, the week that was. Well, all I can say is that I was very happy this week not to be on trains, planes, or automobiles.
Or Asiana flights.
That's definitely covered. It's been a tough week. There's been a couple of horrendous train accidents, that one in France overnight, and then previously in Canada.
In Quebec, yeah.
And at planes, but the Boeing 787 is really not doing so well. We had an Ethiopian Airlines 787 catch fire at Heathrow Airport on Friday. Mm-hmm. And while there were no passengers on board, obviously it still closed down part of the airport and a couple of runways.
As Alf would say, flaming heck.
Well, yeah, and the Dreamliner's not doing so well. They've delivered 66 out of the 930 that have been ordered. And they've only been back in the air for the last 4 months because the American aviation authorities grounded them because there was a fire in a plane in Boston, and then there was another fire in a plane that had to be changed route to go to land in Japan unexpectedly.
So with the nightmare liner, what is going to happen in the future, do you think? Do you think that they're going to fix all their problems? I mean, teething problems are things that not so bad in an iPad, pretty bad in a plane.
Well, people have discussed that it's because of the way that they've changed the entire electronics for the aeroplane, and no doubt they're just going to keep working on that, and hopefully they'll iron out the problems of the lithium iron batteries.
Yes, I'm not encouraged.
Well, don't worry about not being encouraged by that. You could be encouraged by this. The latest television-driven tourism destination is Northern Ireland.
Is it?
Game of Thrones.
Ah.
And I think also, and they're not releasing this, they're all focusing on Game of Thrones, but I think there could be another TV series that I know you are a fan of that's driving some of this tourism increase in Northern Ireland.
Entourage?
The Vikings.
Ah.
And I know you're a fan. Don't try to deny it.
Yeah, I am a fan. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's all I'm going to say about it.
How was your week?
Week was fantastic. Have been travelling a lot by car for work for a change, and delighted. For the last year, I have been using public transport pretty much exclusively since I've returned to Australia, and I've been driving way more than usual. And I've got to say, it's delightful to drive in Melbourne. A lot of people criticise drivers here, but I'm used to Middle Eastern driving, and I find that using an indicator here, people tend to notice that you've got an indicator on, and I enjoy the relative silence of traffic.
Is that because you're driving in a luxury car that's big and white, and it's not a Datsun Toyota?
It's not a
Datsun 21B or anything.
It's a nice set of wheels, and I'm thrilled to bits about that. Although I'm finding that I haven't really driven much for the past year, and I've mostly been driven chauffeur driven in a luxurious green and yellow tram. And to be on the road again for a significant period of time, I'm really enjoying being back on the road in Melbourne. And this goes into one of our topics today. I'm increasing my carbon footprint. So I'm going to have a look at what I'm going to do to smarten up my act.
Well, you've obviously purchased a very smart car.
I have. One of the things I enjoy about my car is every time I stop, the engine stops, and every time I take my foot off the brake, it starts itself again. It's a very economical car. That's not why I bought it. I bought it because I got a good deal, but it came with a lot of cool things that are quite green. Apparently, it's very recyclable, which is probably not looking that far into the future. I would expect a car to last for a good 20 years. I ain't going to be keeping it for 20 years. But they were telling me when they manufactured the car, they take a lot of pride in the reduction of water consumed and the low carbon footprint in the manufacturing process. And they had some big spiel about the kind of paint they have used and the lower emissions during the paint manufacturing process. They're also talking about how they were trying to reduce any kind of carbon footprint along the way of the production of the car, including the tanning of the leather for the seats and every other bit of and bob of the car. They'd changed one of the metal suppliers from something to a different form of nickel, or I can't remember the exact terms, because it was a more efficient mining process, although it did add cost to the car. So I was quite intrigued by how much they were backing themselves in the car process, which I never thought of some of those input costs to the environment. And it was quite intriguing that they'd really worked it out, and they spent a long time discussing it when I went to pick the car up. So that was quite encouraging. But I was delighted, but it wasn't a purchasing motivator. Now that they've made me aware of it, I think that I would be much more concerned about looking at the carbon process for anything that I'm going to use. I never thought that my car was going to have so many variables. I thought there would be kind of a fixed amount of carbon that was going to be put into something that I'll use for my transport. I didn't realise there were going to be so many variables. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
And I just worry about how long it took for the artisan to make my handbag.
I know, the artisan just is a carbon thief.
It's just when it comes to leather and hand stitching, what can I say?
So it's not pleather.
Absolutely not. Pleather doesn't come anywhere near this lady, neither does synthetic musk.
Yeah, this lady ain't for pleather.
No, but speaking of ladies, we have a gentleman in the studio.
Yes, we do.
We do. We would like to welcome James Grudgeon from Energy Saving Social Club.
That's right. It's Grudgeon, by
Grudgeon.
The way.
Grudgeon. Grudgeon, as in a Goujon.
As in Goujon. My nickname at school was Chicken Goujon, which is hilarious, obviously.
Well, I'm famous for mispronunciation of guests' names, so I've done another one.
I'm really sorry to correct you on that.
No, go for your life.
It was when she got Bob Smith wrong that was the challenging day. Burb smut. Yeah.
Why do I feel another Minogue slashing coming my way?
We're going to leave the Minogues alone.
We have James, who is an Englishman in Melbourne. James, how and why are you here?
That is that's a really good question. Most people I speak to in Melbourne asking me that question are asking me if I'm an economic migrant at the moment, which is...
Are you seeking
not
asylum?
Not the case. Well, in a sense, yeah, I'm on a visa. I'm on one of these rather controversial 457 visas that nobody seems to like very much at the moment.
My God.
And I'm over here trying to start a business. Well, exactly. I'm not sure whether what I do for a living is something that would be investigated or particularly interesting, but in that sense. But I've come over here to start a business, and the business or the area that I work in is climate change, or getting people to do stuff that is about reducing their carbon emissions, which was interesting to hear your conversation about your car earlier. Very well done. Although cars, of course, themselves a bit of a problem, or travel in general, a bit of an issue on the CO2 front and carbon emissions. I'm here because there is quite a big opportunity here in Australia at the moment in terms of renewable energy and how people use energy, and energy companies and other organisations that are involved in getting people to do really positive things like put solar panels on their roofs and save energy are up for it now in a way that they're not in Europe. But it's also a country that it's the only country I think I've lived in that is actually seeing the effects of climate change right now. So we can see with bushfires, with flooding, with extreme temperatures.
With Delta Goodrum's pitch of her voice on the... What is she on? The Voice?
The Voice. I'm going to defend Delta Goodrum.
No, the less ozone, the screechier she gets.
Oh, a little bit unfair.
Who said it was fair? You have to be cruel to be kind.
You do, absolutely.
What are some of the things that you've really discovered you love about moving to Melbourne?
People, the city, coffee, obviously. I worked with Australians back in London about 4 years ago, and they were real coffee snobs, and I never really understood it. I used to drink my coffee in places like Starbucks. I'm ashamed to admit. I quite like the fact that I don't think I've actually seen a Starbucks in Melbourne. I believe there are some somewhere.
There
was on Chapel Street. Oh, yeah, there's one on Bourke Street. There was one on Chapel Street. I think that closed down pretty quickly. I don't remember. Where are the rest? Gloria Jean's is one of those chains that seems to be relatively popular here, and Hudson's is a local chain. It's hard for chains to make money because they tend to, their business model is charging a lot of money for something that's quite, it's not necessarily got high input costs, and there are a lot of small bespoke guys happy to do something and roast in the coffee shop themselves and single source that'll produce a much nicer cup of coffee for better price. So,
but I've never drunk so much coffee. In fact, I haven't had any today, which is probably why I'm slightly on edge.
We can remedy that.
But I normally drink about 4 cups of coffee a day at the moment, which is probably not very sensible.
No.
But that's partly because most of what I do for my job is meeting people in coffee shops.
Right.
And I probably ought to start discovering tea or something else, but it's not good for you. But coffee is one of the things that I love about Melbourne. Mm. I mean, what a great place as well for food and restaurants. And it's a pretty, you know, on the cultural side of things, I think it's got a lot going on. You know, it's a lot to be said for it. Very, very different to Sydney and other parts of Australia that I haven't yet had to live in. But, you know, there's something very European about Melbourne, but there's also something very Australian about it.
And very Asian as well. We had a guest last week who was a travelling vaudeville and...
Burlesque performer. And cabaret performer.
Burlesque and cabaret performer who was making some...
Ruben Kay, fantastic.
Yes. Oh, you know, yes. And he was talking about travelling around the world and the differences in how audiences appreciate and sort of the same performance on stage. Mm. So are you finding when you're travelling around Australia and you're working also in the UK, where else in Europe were you working?
In Spain for a little bit and in France as well.
Okay. Were you finding the way that people consume the concepts of the carbon and the environmental message, are people consuming your advice the same? Are people arguing about different points? The reason why I ask this is because my partner's American and a lot of our American family and friends have, depending on their political persuasion, have very firm views on global warming, carbon emissions, what it all means, what the economy means, outweighing what the environmental costs are, jobs before recycling concept. Are you finding that globally?
It is different. I mean, it's interesting that in a country like this one, where, as I said before, you can actually see the impacts of climate change happening, you know, as we go about our daily lives, that you've got a political debate around climate change. I mean, it's not quite as simplistic as having kind of your Tony Abbott on one side, who says he doesn't believe in climate change and thinks it's crap. I think he may have said that some time ago. Mm-hmm. He may have changed his position a little bit on that front, but there's certainly a difference politically, and interestingly, a choice, I think, for people at the next election around whether or not you want to have a government that's actually going to do something about climate change. And there are different approaches there, and I think that reflects people out in the country as well. You're going to find in places like Melbourne, you know, you've got a Green MP here, for example.
Well, the Greens get up to 13% of the overall vote.
You're going to find in places like Melbourne that people are a little bit more switched on maybe than they will be in parts of the country, but that's not always the case. What I do is work with community groups all over Victoria at the moment, and I'll find in quite unexpected places that people are really switched on and interested by the idea of getting together and reducing their carbon emissions or cutting the amount of energy they're using.
Today we're talking about travelling and keeping your carbon footprint as neutralised as possible, and we want to hear from you. We're a community radio station. We're here for you, but for you, and we would like to hear more about what you're doing to reduce your carbon footprint when you travel. You could be thinking about your commute. You could be thinking about taking holidays. You could be thinking about any kind of travel, but how do you reduce your carbon footprint while you are on the way? You can SMS us on 0427 Joy 949. You can phone in a message, 1300 Joy 949, or email us on air at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear more about it. We've got a lot of different ways that we can reduce our carbon footprint. I think the airlines are going out of their way to, I think every airline that I looked at to have a look, every major airline certainly at least had a page and a program about how to reduce carbon footprint and how you can pay for offset programs that they've got. There are lots of cool, easy wins. Joe, what are the more in-depth things we've got to think about, the things that we didn't think about? Like I said earlier, I didn't really piece together that there were so many input elements to manufacturing a car. I didn't even think about it. And of course, now it makes the most obvious sense in the world. And that's sort of a longer-term view. What's a sort of a bigger picture thing?
Well, I guess the thing that actually struck me while I was travelling recently was we're so used to seeing people snapping everything that they can with a camera. And the camera has...
Duck face.
Yes. And the camera has evolved from being film-based mm-hmm. to now being digital. And they're very, very small. And what do we then do with those digital images? And
iCloud.
Exactly. And I started to think about, well, okay, we put it into the iCloud and we put it onto all the Google servers if we're using a Google product. And what happens then? You know, that obviously takes energy.
Well, yeah, I guess it's a massive library of duck faces.
Well,
billions and billions of duck faces.
And in terms of travel
and planking,
if we look at someone like Google, they have their servers based in places from Finland to Iowa.
Right. So these servers have got to be big, and how do they fuel them?
Well, not only are the servers big, but there's an extraordinary number of servers. Now, I appreciate that digesting numbers over the radio can be just, perhaps not the easiest thing to do.
Well, if you're driving, pull over, because you're going to want to know this.
Well, you will,
it'll
because
be a test.
Just Google alone, the amount of electricity that they use in 1 year could actually power 200,000 homes.
Ooh. What kind of homes? Are we talking Western homes or are we talking Bangladeshi homes?
No, we're talking American homes.
Oh, my God.
We are.
So that's like 400,000 European homes.
That's right. And there's on the planet, there's 4.9 million corporate servers. There's 3.6 million servers for email. And there's 1.3 million servers for CRM, or customer relationship management and databases.
So
and Google alone are responsible for nearly 1 million of them. Not okay. That we're highlighting Google, but they are somebody that everybody knows well.
So when you're travelling and you're taking a million travel snaps and you thought, one day I'll go, I'll edit all the bad ones out and I'll keep the three good ones of the 43,000 that I took and I'll just put them here on the cloud. Someone's got to fuel that. Even though it's free of charge to you, there is a cost to every photo that has been uploaded, right?
There absolutely is. And the internet consumes probably just under 10% of the world's energy.
Really?
Yep.
So where are they getting the energy from? I'm assuming there's a massive solar panel on Steve Jobs' grave.
I think it's true to say that Apple have a commitment to renewable energy, and so too do Google.
Oh, good.
Yes, Google would maintain that 25%.
Did you find that out on Bing?
I actually looked. I went to Wikipedia.
Bing doesn't use a lot of the world's resources.
Well, actually, it's not true. You know, I for good or for bad, I actually went to the New Yorker for this information in their recent science and technology magazine, the issue of a couple of months ago now, and they had an intriguing story about a company that had been set up by Don Montague, who was a surfer, and his company Makani has now been financed by Google X, which is the part of Google that likes to fund startups to do with renewable energy, and he's developing a flying wind turbine that actually cruises in loops hundreds of feet up. It's like a big kite.
Awesome.
And so the higher you go into the atmosphere, the stronger and the more stable the wind is, which of course means that the wind turbines that we see in places, well, not so many here in Australia because of current political views on them, but it's certainly all through
Europe. We don't have enough
space,
Joe.
I know. I was worried about that.
Yeah. A seagull might hit one.
Yeah, that's a possibility. All that space that we have in the centre of
the
country.
Let's dig up some coal, maybe some brown seam coal.
Yeah, that seems to be an alternative, doesn't it? Yeah. So
no
anyway,
cost there.
There are things that the large server providers are doing, but there is a cost to every digital snap that you take when you're on holiday, and an even greater cost for all of the video footage that you take and then upload.
Okay, so YouTube, potentially, when we look at all the things we pop up on YouTube, maybe you could get things off that aren't necessary, or download things once instead of re-downloading it every time or watching it live because you've got broadband. This is what we were talking about before, the unexpected costs to the environment of travelling. Now, I remember years and years ago staying in hotels where they first put up the signs saying, if you want to reuse your towel, hang it up, or if you don't want to, leave it in the bath. I always thought that was a way of them saving money, which it is, but the way they're saving money is reducing their consumption of water and electricity, which is what we're talking about today. That was about 25 years ago, the first time I remember seeing that that little card in the bathroom talking about towels. Now it's an absolutely essential thing to do that, because we also want to make sure we don't leave the air conditioning running in hotels room and lights on and TVs on and all these other ambient things that we would be very conscientious of at home because we pay a power bill, but when we go away that we don't. That's energy saving in your face. What you're saying now is there are things that we might not think about that are energy saving opportunities when we're on the go that can help save the world. Well, in our own small part.
To a point, and Google have another argument that they would like to see, of course, everybody utilise their servers, because they then think that they could reduce the number of servers that are on the planet, because at the moment, you know, we've got millions of them and they're simply not being used to capacity, and they're older, so they're not energy efficient in any way. And Google really think that if people would actually share, they could actually bring the number of servers down from the many, many millions to about 85,500, which I don't know if that's possible, but that's what they think.
We've just had an excellent, excellent, excellent point of view that has just been SMS through. I'm sorry, the name isn't on it, but if you want to SMS back or if you don't want to say your name, that's fine. There are a very few amount of words that convey a very big message. Go vegan. Go vegan, the best thing you can do for the environment. Thank you very much for the person whose phone number ends in 3 for SMSing that in. That is a very powerful statement. The production of food is one of these expensive import mechanisms, and businesses like McDonald's that sell cheap food have very economically expensive production methods to get their food off the ground, to get those cows fed so they grow to the cost optimal price before they centrifuge them and put them into chicken nuggets or whatever they do with cows. I don't know. There's a lot of bleaching in the process, but and pink stuff that I think they either choose to deep fry it and it becomes something, or they make it cold and it's a drink. None of these processes are necessarily a great way to produce economical food. Joe, do you ever use those kind of restaurants when you're on the go because it's easier?
No, I have a firm policy not to. I will admit that I have been known to use the powder room in McDonald's on the Lower East Side when it was very, very cold and I really needed to pee. But other than that, I avoid them. I don't agree with their practices, and it's not the kind of food that I actually enjoy tasting, and it's not the kind of environment that I like to eat in. I'd much prefer to grab an apple from the outdoor market.
So you're not into food on paper, serviettes on trays?
Nor am I into takeaway coffee in takeaway cups.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Yeah. We just had an SMS in from another person whose name isn't on it, but number ending in 4. Thank you, lucky number 4. Imagine how many trees we would have used for paper-based data instead of uploaded data. I don't think I would have printed out all my duck faces just because I was outside the Brandenburger Tor. I think I...
Well, when we're having a pop at the internet and Google and all of those people out there who are responsible collectively for about 1% of carbon emissions, it's big. It's going to go up by 60% by 2030 as well, as other carbon emissions go down. So that's huge. Let's not also forget that things like online video conferencing, smart grids, smarter cities, all of the really good things that we can do now through our iPhones, our mobiles, our smartphones, our laptops, our tablets, that are about reducing the amount of carbon that we're putting into the atmosphere.
Yeah, good point.
Are something worth remembering as well. But the internet is... I think most people use the internet and they just don't think of the consequences at all.
Hold that thought, because we want to talk about emerging nations as well and travelling around. And it's okay in a country of 22 million, but we have neighbours in our region that have cities with twice that population, and they don't necessarily have the mindfulness, but they don't have the consumerism that we do. So let's talk about that when you're travelling around. Joy 94.9, you're on the Escape Pod.
And all the beauty in the world.
We were just talking while we were disco dancing with our glow sticks around the studio about the power consumption of computer consumables. We all use these things to book our travel, to use while we go away. Mark, you were saying before that it's not only the consumption when you use things, but it's the input creating the assets, the exotic metals, and
it's graved grave. In fact, so you start with the metal from the ore or whatever that's mined to make it, and these things require some pretty precious metals. And it's actually the big tech companies have come to the realization that, you know, as much as we can mine this today, there'll be a point in time where we've mined it as much as we can in an efficient way.
So these are quite exotic metals and materials.
Yeah. Like, I mean, gold's not so exotic, but there are other, I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Blabladium.
Yes, that one. It's got the symbol of BL? I don't know.
BLAH.
But the
nuclear way to nothing.
What they're also coming to realise is the concept of mining it from the e-waste. So we send out, you know, when we dispose of these products, it ends up going to some waste, you know, tip or something. If we mined that tip for the same metals again, as in recycling in a sense, it's actually much more efficient to do it than getting it out of ore deposits or actual, you know, ground deposits. Which makes it a more cost-effective way of you know, creating new products all over again.
Because, once again, it's not how rare the metal is, it's how they have to mine it, where they have to go to get it, and what they have to do to get it out of the ground, and who they've got to tread on to get there.
Yep. I do the show Technogaze, and we've actually done a whole show on e-waste.
Oh, right.
And the whole concept of, you know, from start to finish, what your devices require to power them during their life, but also what happens to them when you get rid of them. And also thinking about the local level, like how do you get rid of them responsibly, making sure that they do get reused.
And we travel with these devices, don't we, all the time. Every time we go on a trip, whether it's a short trip out the front door or whether it's actually for a long-haul flight.
Or even a meal that we have to Instagram blog.
Indeed.
Look at my Luxa.
That's right. I didn't send any Instagrams. Oh, I did. Yes, I did. I'm guilty. I did the Luxa one. So, James, what are you doing now that you've come to Melbourne to tackle some of these existential problems we're discussing today?
Not all of them. But, I mean, look, the good news about tackling climate change, or what some people call saving the planet, which I always think is quite amusing because the planet's going to be fine. It's us that are going to be in trouble as human beings.
Is that because we won't be able to live on the planet
Because of the way in which temperature is rising globally, you know, there are places on the planet that are going to become increasingly more difficult to live in.
But there must be places that are becoming easier to live in.
Such as
the North Swedish rainforest.
Yeah. Well, you could say that. And there's people in the UK who, you know, rather perversely are enjoying the sunshine that they think comes with climate change. But
Costa del Sol, just out of Edinburgh.
Yeah, exactly. Lovely sunny Edinburgh. It's still pretty cold there, I have to say. What I'm trying to do is set up something called Energy Saving Social Club, which is free to join. It's for households and small businesses, and we give them advice and information on how to save energy, primarily by changing their behaviour, installing products and services, and we use our bulk purchasing power to buy green power, electricity, energy-saving products, solar, really just to try and make it as easy as possible. Not surprisingly, most people don't really trust the mainstream energy retailers for lots of reasons. There's 23 different energy retailers trying to sell to people at any one time in Victoria, or have licences to sell at the moment. Door knocking and people kind of putting people under pressure has made people feel a little bit uncomfortable and really don't understand the offers that are being put to them. So it's our job to try and make these things easy. But the really good news about tackling climate change is actually a lot of what we can do is about improving our lives anyway. So
okay.
So
what are things we can do to reduce our footprint? Public transport is one of those things that I've very much so embraced for about 15 months.
And then left. Why did you stop using public transport?
For the nature of my job, I have to be mobile, and I've got areas I need to cover, and there are things I can't do easily, like and they're around Victoria, so it very much so work related.
So it's a playoff between carbon footprint efficiency and, mm-hmm. and time efficiency.
Yeah, and economic efficiency.
It's a call you have to make. Yeah.
So particular, and this is one of the few jobs I've ever had where I've needed to have a car.
Sure.
When I don't have to go out and I plan my day around, I have a day out and I try and use public transport for the rest of the time. What are other things we can do? Getting around, travelling further afield or domestically, what are your thoughts?
Look, I think one of the things that there's a movement, a bit like the slow food movement that's emerging at the moment, of people who are promoting something called slow travel. And that's about kind of thinking about a journey that you're making between either your home and a destination, whether you're going to work or you're going on holiday or you're going for a business trip or whatever it might be, as a moment when you're relaxing and you're taking in your surroundings and you're kind of enjoying the journey. It's difficult when public transport doesn't provide the services that you need. And Melbourne isn't brilliant on public transport. It's I always find it entertaining when I get to Melbourne Airport and there's absolutely no option for you whatsoever other than just getting in a cab. It's a real bugbear of mine.
No, you can use Skybus, but that was a political decision.
Yeah.
And Joe's going to talk to that very soon.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes, we keep inviting Melbourne Airport to come on to the show, but they haven't done so. We want a train link.
We had a former state government that gave away the rail corridor option for a period of time.
So I understand,
Because of the CityLink, Transurban. Was it Transurban or whoever the developer was? They made that negotiation. They made that decision in the late 80s. And it's been an extremely unpopular decision.
I think you can understand why as well. It's unusual to have a major international airport without a rail link.
Absolutely.
But you know, more generally speaking, Victoria, is it well served for public transport? Not particularly when compared to other equivalent places in the world. But you know, that may be that because we see the problem of increasing car use, and you were talking about using your car just now. The solution to that being building more roads, which for me is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to, and unfortunately, if you've got decades of underinvestment in public transport, then you're going to have a problem when you're trying to actually solve that problem. But people can think about how they travel. Walking. Melbourne's a great city to walk around, for example. Great to cycle around. There's an interesting relationship between cyclists and car drivers where I live in Sandringham.
And particularly if you read the Herald Sun. My God.
But, you know, there's a lot of people out there on their bikes. I'm not particularly keen on wearing Lycra, and it seems to be compulsory around where I live, but not everybody has to do that.
I think you're a bit young. Usually it's sort of the mid-40s plus where the Lycra becomes...
Yeah, absolutely.
And then tropping... traipsing around on tippy toes with cyclists, shoes around the coffee shops, please.
But if you think about, you know, the opportunity of actually kind of taking in your surroundings, enjoying the journey, slowing down a bit, and having a bit of time to kind of think about what's going on around you, rather than sitting behind the wheel of a car in a traffic jam on the Monash Freeway, if there is a public transport alternative, or there's an alternative to jumping in a cab that's walking or getting on a bike, you're probably going to get a health benefit. Whether that's mental or physical, you know, you're going to enjoy it. And so, the really good thing about all of this stuff is that by changing our lifestyles, we're going to get health benefits. We're going to feel better. We're going to have more comfortable homes. We're going to make the place that we live much nicer for everybody.
Hmm. We want to hear from you. It's Joy 94.9. We're on the Skate Pod. We're talking about reducing our carbon footprint or reducing waste when you're travelling, whether it be commuting or going for a great big cruise. Is there a way of getting to Europe from Australia that is economical? Have you tried it? SMS or email us 0427 Joy 949 or on air at joy.org.au. I'm going to throw to our guest here. Hello.
Hi there.
How did you get to Australia? Did you swim?
I didn't swim. I didn't come on a ship. I came on a big polluting jumbo jet, I'm afraid, and I will be going back on one
now,
to see my mum for the first time in 2 years at Christmas.
Did you make a decision about paying for the carbon offset?
So I paid for an offset.
Yep. So tell us about that. A lot of our listeners don't know. We've had a couple of SMSs in that said they don't know what to do and how to do it, and they book online and where was the option.
The first thing, just to tackle this whole air travel thing, air travel is responsible for about 2% of global emissions of CO2. Okay, now that's not insignificant. We were just talking about Google and data centers being about
1%. Oh.
1%. So it's not insignificant, but it's not huge. You know, the biggest amount comes from actually how we use electricity at home, okay, and the emissions that come from our homes. So air travel is not the big disaster that
so people being think away from is. Home and traveling is actually good.
It can be good, but you know, but let's also remember, you know, that there are alternatives to. It's difficult when you're in my circumstances, for example, where I've got family and friends over the other side of the world, and there aren't that many options for me getting over there. My mother-in-law and father-in-law are planning on coming over to see us here. They're coming on a cruise ship, and they're going to get that cruise ship from Singapore, and that will come around the top of Australia all the way to Sydney. There are different ways of doing things. It's challenging. I think what you have to do if you have to travel, think about offsetting, and also not just in terms of using the airline's offset program, but offsetting in terms of other things that you're doing in your daily life to reduce your carbon emissions as well. Because when we look at all of our personal carbon emissions as individuals or families, it's made up of how we travel, where we get our food from, what we're doing in our home to consume energy. And travel is only going to be one small part of it. And I think I wouldn't want to say to people that, you know, you shouldn't fly whatsoever, because I'd be a hypocrite because I do it myself. But do think about, you know, what you're doing elsewhere in your daily life. And I think also just look for slow travel options as well, because they're fun.
Well, Claire from Dingley Village has just emailed in and said that she took an unwittingly economical safari trip in Africa because the van broke down and they had to push it. So thank you, Claire.
Nice. Yeah, that's
saving the world one step at a time.
That sounds quite dangerous, a van breaking down in a safari as well.
You do sort of get yourself into an ethical dilemma, because as you've just been saying, the major consumption is about when you actually are at home and living. So with travel options, for example, and accommodation, do you do the option of staying in the hotel, which is an existing building, it has staff that it employs, you get a card so that when you go into the hotel room, you put that into the slot and all of the electrical devices and the aircon come on, and when you leave the hotel room, you take it with you, and so everything powers down. Or do you do the couch surfing or the Airbnb option, where you actually go and stay with a family or in an apartment that's already there and wisely consume energy that way? I mean, there's...
Well, you could do both, couldn't you? I mean, look, most good kind of hotel and accommodation providers are pretty wise about this stuff now, mainly because they want to save money themselves. And it is about saving phenomenal amounts of money. We did a carbon footprint and energy analysis of a youth hostel down in St Kilda the other day, and they were spending $65,000 on their electricity every year because they have an air conditioning unit in every single room. They have had a program where they talk to the people that are using those rooms about how they use those air conditioners, and they've reduced that by a third by just having conversations with their guests. Now, and you think about the impact of that in terms of their costs, that's great. So, you know, look for organisations that are doing the right thing. But also, I think, you know, it comes back to what we were talking about earlier. Actually going and staying with a family or, you know, experiencing things in a different way can be a bit more fun, and you're going to have a very different experience to how you would if you were going to a mainstream resort and staying in a resort hotel. And I think, you know, be a bit more ambitious about, you know, your travel plans, basically, and be prepared to maybe think about doing things in a different way. And there's lots of really good websites out there that can help with this kind of stuff now as well.
Tamara from Elwood just messaged in. She and her partner Jenny went to Cambodia and lived like Cambodians. They went and volunteered some time and lived with people in their homes, and they found that an interesting way to explore the country. Get around on the back of bikes wasn't totally safe, but it was one of those things where they got a bit of dirt under their nails and they really experienced Cambodia. So they lived with the local people and they did some volunteering in the local community, and that was a way of exploring things. So it was really the flight that was kind of the energy consumer for them, but they gave back a bit when they were there. So interesting thought. We've also got Daryl, who said, "Hi guys, just a thought, it'd be environmentally friendly to perhaps take an outbound boat from Christmas Island. Just a thought." Thanks, Daryl. But how do we get to Christmas Island, Daryl?
Let's not go there.
Do we have to go and migrate to Iraq and flee? What's
jump a queue?
Jump a queue, take a job. Is that what it is, Daryl?
Oh, my God.
But thank you for the thought. Interesting. And thank you for the smiley face this afternoon. Enjoy 94.9. This is the Escape Pod. Let us know your thoughts. 0427 JOY 949 or email in on air at joy.org.au. Joe.
Well, variety is definitely the spice of life this afternoon. We've been focusing on
spicy afternoon
spices and the journey. James, how is the Social Energy Club progressing? What's the future looking like? Because you've come from the other side of the world. Mm-hmm. You've started up a new venture. Mm-hmm. You've implemented your early strategies. What's it looking like? Is there getting traction? What do you think will happen?
We've got 1,600 or so households and small businesses that have signed up already as members. And we do that by working with small business traders groups, community groups, local councils.
Anywhere you can drink
big
coffee.
Big organisations. Anywhere you can drink coffee. And we go out and we have conversations with people in those communities through those organisations that are about saying, let's all get together and try and cut our energy bills initially. And then you have a conversation with them about the benefits of changing their behaviour. And all of it is geared towards people collectively being stronger than they would be individually. Firstly, about cutting their energy bills, but then secondly, about the environmental benefit as well. But, you know, we don't want to hit people over the head with, you know, polar bears falling off the edge of melting ice caps and all that kind of stuff, which doesn't particularly motivate people. And environmentalists, a lot of environmentalists that I've worked with over the last 10 years tend to think that scaring people about the end of the world is nigh and we should all be wearing hair shirts is the way to motivate people. I actually think quite the opposite.
How Protestant.
Quite the opposite. You know, there are really positive things that we could do that are about making the world a much better place, that are actually going to make our lives much more enjoyable. And we'll have the opportunity to actually make sure that we're not doing stuff to people in developing countries who are going to feel the impact of it first of all and foremost.
Good point. Hold that thought. Joy 94.9. This is the Escape Pod.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.